All right. So the word comes down that you have to go home and work from home, telework. Great new word for everybody, right? And you're thinking, what the heck? Some of you are thinking, this is great. I get to work from my pajamas and take it easy. And others are going, how am I going to be productive? Schools are closed. Government agencies are closed. You know, the gym is closed. All kinds of stuff is closed. You're isolated from your team. You don't have all the resources and access to the stuff that you normally have. And you really do start to wonder, what's the impact? What can I get done when things are like this? A couple of years ago, I read a book called Isaac Newton. And in the 1600s, when he was at Trinity College at Cambridge, another epidemic of the bubonic plague swept through Europe. And when it started going through England, in an effort to impose containment, a word we've all become familiar with, he has to walk home. So he trudges on home to his country town that he grew up in, and doesn't have his books, doesn't have his laboratory equipment. And Newton, twiddling his thumb, saying, well, what am I going to do in my spare time? And he settles on writing the philosophy and principles of modern mathematics, or what we know as calculus today. So clearly, with a lot less resources than we have available to us and technology available to us, he was still able to figure out how to make a lot work for him in that environment. Although one of my daughters told me, Dad had Newton only been taken by the plague, my college GPA would have been a heck of a lot higher. What we get that a lot of you all have operated in this environment and know a lot about this environment. Some of you are comfortable with it. Some of you are sitting here going, well, where do I start? So for those of you who are comfortable with it, great. You can treat this discussion as a way to dust off those skills and act as reminders and refreshers. For those of you who are out there and going, this is a little outside my comfort zone, hey, this is a good place to start. Mike and I, our team, we've been operating in this environment for the past 18 years. Because when we're not in front of our customers, we're almost exclusively operating in the virtual environment because we're all geographically disparate. We're all over the country. So we've looked at the experiences we've had, what's worked for us. We've culled out some of those heavy hitters, those needle movers. And that's really all we want to focus on with you all today. And those pictures down in the left-hand corner, that the one on the right, that's me. Sorry, I had to include Mike as well. Didn't mean to victimize everybody on the other end of this phone by having to.
But at least you guys don't have to be in the room with Ed while you listen to this. You only have to look at his picture for 10 more seconds.
I have to agree. My wife feels the same way. All right. So this is not everything leading in the virtual environment. That's not the intent. These are some things, real heavy hitters, needle movers, like we said, that you can deploy when you leave this meeting today that will let you make your groups or your teams work together much more effectively, or at least as effectively as possible in the virtual environment, in any virtual environment. So in order to keep that kind of spirit of high level, big ticket items, we want to talk a little bit about some things that are important to understand in the virtual environment. We're going to focus a little bit on things that we all can do to make virtual meetings more effective. And then some techniques that both facilitators or the person leading and people participating in the meeting can do to make sure that it works to the maximum extent possible, be as effective as possible. And then, like we said, since we're not going to tell you all things and we're going to hit high level fire hose for the next 30 minutes, we've provided you some tools, or you can go to our website and download them. There's a link on there that'll tell you exactly where they are. And those tools and resources, there's just a handful of them, kind of will fill in the gaps or provide amplification to the things we're talking about today. So to trudge down that path right now over the next 30 minutes, Mike's going to start by talking about some things that are important to understand in the virtual environment.
Hey, thanks, Ed. And folks, before we go on anymore, if you're experiencing a little bit of audio compression in this video, Trust me, it is audio compression. Ed hasn't been drinking. It's not the Foster Brooks impression.
You don't know that I've not been, well, I'm working from home. You don't know that I've not been drinking.
No, I was just going to say, if you hear my voice start to slow down, it might be the Jameson in my glass, but look, no, we're not going
to. After 18 gonna, years of working with you, Mike, I need to start off every day with a drink.
Hey, folks. So we're not going to bore you with a textbook definition of what the virtual environment is. Ed kind of explained it a little bit, but really in its basic terms, anytime that you're interacting with somebody and it's not face-to-face, you're using some kind of technology to enable that communication, that's the virtual environment that we're talking about. And with that comes some advantages, some obvious challenges, and maybe some you haven't thought of, and some considerations for leadership when you're working with an organization in this environment. What are some things I need to think about before I get started? Okay, so the advantages. There's a ton of them, but maybe some of them that you haven't thought of, or maybe haven't thought of this way. The first one is you can end up with a physically healthier workforce. Sure, right now we're all isolated because we're trying to stop the spread of the coronavirus, but even when we're not dealing with a pandemic like that, you've now got time to go to the gym when it opens back up, or even work out at home. At lunchtime, get up and walk around a little bit. Go for a walk outside in the sunshine instead of sitting in your cube. And you get to eat healthier because you're cooking stuff at home or eating stuff at home rather than running through the drive-thru at a fast food place. You get to work from almost anywhere. You got a cell phone, you got a computer, you can plug into the internet. There's a lot of stuff that you can get done that's almost as good as being in the office. We're just missing the face-to-face piece of it. That leads to an improved work-life balance, which all of us should enjoy anyway. You got a lot more time to do things you needed to do around the house, maybe that you didn't get to do this weekend. During a break, you can go out and pull weeds. It's good for your mental health, right? You get to spend more time with your kids, which, I don't know, in some cases might not be an advantage.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
I have, please remember, I have four daughters. When they were all teenagers, I was safer being deployed places in the Marine Corps than I was being in this house, especially if they were all in trouble at the same time.
No doubt. Another great thing that leads to this improved work-life balance, no commute time, right? You don't have to get in a car and get in a rat race every morning. My commute time is about 30 seconds. I go from the kitchen where my coffee pot is to here in my office. And you get to some extent determine your own work hours, although there's some challenges associated with that. This last one we read about, thought it was kind of interesting, is that documenting your work becomes more important. Why? You can't walk into the boss's office and show them what you've been doing all day. You got to formally document it somehow and then send it via email or put it on a shared site or something like that. They were suggesting that this could actually be an organizational advantage in today's world where metrics are king, right? Now you're going to have to start documenting things more diligently. So those are some of the advantages that maybe we haven't thought of. Let's talk about some challenges. Look at this poor cat down in the lower right corner here. He's not enjoying it. The first step in this is recognizing that there are challenges with the virtual environment. Look, the things that you do to lead your organization or to be productive in your organization face-to-face might not work in the virtual environment as well as you expected them to. And that's really what this short seminar is about. What are some things that we can do to keep our organization productive when we're not with each other? First one is self-discipline. It's up to each and every one of us to figure out how to be a more productive member of the team and an effective member of the team. But I'll tell you, when it comes to self-discipline, the biggest challenge might surprise you, and that's folks tend to work too much. If you got that type A personality, the go-getter, you're gonna go sit down, eat dinner with your family that's all stuck in the house now too, and then you're gonna go sit back down at the computer just to check email one more time, and before you know it, it's 10 o'clock at night and you're still sitting there. Trust me, it's very easy to get sucked into the loop of 10, 12, 14 hour days if you don't set some boundaries for yourself and at the end of the workday, just close your computer and call it a day and wait until tomorrow.
And then you've got a technical. Or you end up looking like that guy.
Yeah, or you end up looking like that guy. Technical challenges, right? Your internet goes down, your computer crashes, the software that you're using doesn't work, has a glitch in it, can't send the file you want to send. Those are challenges we deal with all the time. Just know that when your lifeblood and your work depends on the virtual environment and depends on this technology, have some plans in place to deal with those technical issues when they pop up.
Yeah, particularly now, because I'm sure everybody's recognizing that the system is being taxed pretty extensively right now. You know, all these systems. So they're trying to accommodate that. All the companies that run these software applications are trying to make it work better. But just be prepared for that.
Yeah, thanks. So you'll notice it's quiet in the background right now. The distractions in the virtual environment are, the list is long and wide. Get rid of the barking dogs. Please talk to your spouse about cleaning the living room rug while you're in the meeting. Those kinds of distractions, while they might not be too bad for you, it's going to be horrible for the rest of the folks that are trying to listen to you and trying to have a have communication around that. So get rid of the distractions, because in the virtual environment, you only have two-dimensional communication. You only get what you hear, what you transmit, and what you receive. We know the philosophy or the psychology behind communication, that about 70% of it is what you see, the body language, the rolling of the eyes. Look, I can tell when I'm in trouble by the look on Brandy's face, my wife. She doesn't have to say anything. If you took that look away, I'd probably go down the wrong road for a long time before somebody turned me around.
Hey, Mike, she doesn't have to say anything ever. You're always in trouble with her.
Well, yeah, that's true too. And then there's a lack of social cues too when you're trying to facilitate a meeting. You can't tell if people are falling asleep, if they're playing solitaire or Facebooking, who's paying attention and who isn't. The point is here, folks, because it's just transmit and receive and it's only what you hear, use your words. It's going to take more verbal communication to get the same message across. Okay, common challenge. Let's look at some of the considerations for us, and particularly for leaders in the virtual environment. Folks will have shorter attention spans. Why? Because of all those distractions we just talked about, the barking dogs, the vacuum cleaners. They're going to try to multitask. You know, I've got to sit in this meeting, but I've got an opportunity to check email or answer email. Or maybe I'm going to cook dinner while the meeting's going on. Just know that that's there and put some things in place to deal with those shorter attention spans. Folks should understand that this is their appointed place of duty during the meeting. Team bonding is a lot more difficult in the virtual environment. Hard to high-five somebody over the phone. And when you combine that with the lack of communication, no nonverbal cues anymore, meetings get distracted and sometimes can be disruptive to team bonding. Forbes magazine suggests that trust is fragile in the virtual environment. So we as leaders have to do something about that. You've got folks on your team with all kinds of personalities, all the way from the type A, want to do everything, to the very quiet wallflower types, even in a face-to-face environment. You take those personalities and put them in a virtual environment where they're separated but just talking to each other, and they get exacerbated. The dominant personality is going to try to dominate the meeting, and the wallflower personality, you're not even going to know they're there. As a facilitator, as a leader of the organization, you have to take steps to keep those people engaged and balanced in the meetings.
Hey, and Mike, just to interject, clearly we talk about this leading in a virtual environment, not just the leader doing it, right? But all of us leading in the virtual environment. Let's say it's not your team, it's a group, because oftentimes we have a group of disparate people that we need to bring together to have a meeting. It's very difficult for those people to already bond. And if you've got those types of personalities, or it's a new team member that's trying to become part of that team, we collectively as leaders have to recognize that and take the appropriate steps in this environment to emphasize and exacerbate the ability to bond and be aware of those things. Otherwise, it has an exponential effect. Sorry, Mike.
Thanks, Ed. No. Technology mastery. So here's a consideration for all of us, right? You've got everything from a simple tool like this free Zoom software that we're using to record this, all the way up to the very complex things that the government uses to have secured meetings and pass information back and forth with some kind of file exchange thing and everything in between. The point of this bullet here, technology mastery, is it's up to all of us to figure out how to use what you're using before you have to use it, right? Don't get on a meeting with somebody and spend the first 5 minutes clicking buttons trying to figure out how to pass the information you need to pass. Get familiar with what you're using. Access to resources might be a challenge. Everybody just got told to go home and telework. What about that calendar that was on their desk and the schedule that was on their computer at work? The files that are on SharePoint that you need or on some kind of secured server that maybe you're not going to have access to anymore. How do you mitigate that challenge? So this last one, folks, be careful with it. We've been doing this for 18 years. Living and operating in the virtual environment is a typically sedentary activity. You can come in and, if you're not paying attention, spend 10 hours in a chair. You're not drinking enough water. You're not eating right. You work right through lunch because it's simple. You're at home. You'll eat later. Trust me, be careful with this one. Set a little timer on your phone or something every hour or so for you to wiggle your toes or get up and walk around, go step outside and get some fresh air. It's really important. Okay. So from here, Ed's going to take us into talking a little bit about effective virtual meetings.
First, let me stand up and put my cigarette out.
Yeah, that's right. One of my friends is an internal medicine doctor, and his favorite quote is that sitting is the new smoking. So folks, just take care of yourselves. Wash your hands, right?
I'll put my Jameson down and put my cigarette out and stand up. All right. So if we're talking about the virtual environment as a whole and leading in the virtual environment, why in the world are we all of a sudden drilling down to just virtual meetings? Because in all likelihood, this is where you're going to spend the bulk of your time. And that's really it. And while there's a lot of stuff we could talk about, we want to touch on the two biggies, which are who actually is influencing this environment the most, meetings, and what areas do they impact. As inane as it sounds, it's those who are leading and those who are participating are the two major influencers, and good, bad, or indifferent impact the things they do before, the things we do during, and the things we do after are the things that determine, all three of those determine the effectiveness of that meeting.
So, and it's ones that you have control over.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's take a look right now at just the leaders, all right, and some big ticket items that are important to them. Develop and distribute purpose and objectives. Build a timeline that supports those purpose and objectives, and then consider the rules of engagement that you as the leader, your expectations of behavior, right, for how that's going to work. The key is it doesn't matter whether you're 10 seconds, 10 minutes away from a meeting starting that's a pop-up meeting, you can pull out a yellow sticky and say, okay, what do I want that purpose to be? What do I want those objectives to be that are going to support it? Come up with a very rapid timeline that you think just what you need to support that, okay? Let that determine who needs to attend. Minimize, limit the number of people that need to come to that meeting. You know, somebody told me years ago, is Justin coming? And they were being funny. And I went, Justin, we don't even have a Justin. He goes, just in case. These people we go meet with always invite just in case. And it is moderately funny, but sometimes it's not, because when we start inviting just in case to everybody to these meetings, it increases the complexity. And when they provide input, it takes the meeting longer. Unnecessarily, I'm saying, right? So determining who needs to be there is really important. And in a virtual environment, it's that much more important because it's that much more difficult to facilitate and maintain control. Determine the media that's going to support that. Okay? What the purpose is, who's there, what's the best medium. Then make sure you got a backup plan. The backup plan for today would have been, if we were doing this live, for people to actually say, you know what? If this goes down, pull your slide deck out that we sent you or you downloaded from online and follow through it. Have a backup plan and make sure you communicate the backup plan to everybody. And then, really important, and it just takes some of that self-discipline Mike was talking about, practice it. Review your content very briefly. Make sure you remember what it is. That just helps you as the facilitator stay on track, and it helps everybody else too. And then, of course, the key, make sure you know how to use the technology. Technology mastery, right? Participants, if you get that stuff ahead of time, then you can understand the purpose and objectives and then be a much more effective subject matter expert, the one you're supposed to be for that meeting. Once you know that, make sure you know where you're going to meet, where you're going to sit. Close off that part in your house. Make sure you know everything works the way it's supposed to and it's set. You need to practice and test the technology too. We always recommend 10, 15 minutes prior, jump online, make sure everything works, put yourself on mute, go get a cup of coffee, sit down, and then you're ready to go. And then finally, if you don't know why you're going to the meeting and you don't know that how the technology works, please ask early. And that's for everybody else involved, just not for your effectiveness, okay? During the meeting, whoever's running that meeting needs to make sure at the beginning they review the purpose and objectives and briefly the agenda and say, this is what we're here to accomplish today. Everything else needs to stay off the table. And here's how much time we have to do it and the time we're going to do it in. And that kind of becomes part of the rules of engagement for that meeting as well, all right? It's up to you as the leader to keep the participants engaged effectively and appropriately. That's keeping them on track, pointing out to people, asking for people, soliciting input from the appropriate people, keeping the people who are providing non-relevant commentary down to a minimum. That's all about keeping the participants engaged. And remember, your primary job is to facilitate, not to participate. You invited SMEs, the right people, to the meeting. Let them be the solution finders. And then if you are the leader, provide appropriate guidance at the appropriate times, but try not to dominate the meeting yourself just because you're facilitating. And then finally, if you need to identify somebody up front right before the meeting starts or at some point before the meeting starts that's got a way to capture the information and knows what needs to be captured and then does that for you during the meeting. And then at the end, make sure that whatever was captured and whatever actions were discussed are reviewed and validated by the folks in the meeting. Participants, you got to come prepared on time. I know lots of times we have back-to-back meetings. So it starts with things like scheduling, right? Don't schedule me back-to-back. At least give me 15 minutes before a meeting or in between meetings. Stay engaged, but only provide input that's relevant to your subject matter expertise, or if you need to, share it appropriately before, after, whenever. But stay engaged, but stay in your lane. Remember, you're a participant, not the facilitator. There is a facilitator. Let them facilitate. If you need something to get out to the group, you might run it by them. Say, hey, would it be okay to ask a question right now? And the facilitator says, hold on, let's go down the path we're doing and I'll come back to you. Then we maintain positive control of the environment, okay? And then finally, make sure you're reviewing the actions at the end and validating them. By the way, if you do all these things and the leader does the things that we talked about up here during the meeting, you will both stay more engaged and more focused. And then finally, three big things that both leaders and participants really need to do. First is when that meeting's over, whoever's running it, sit down with the person who was helping you capture all the notes. And on short order, very soon thereafter, don't wait, get those notes done. Clean them up. Make sure they're simple, succinct, concise, and get them back to everybody in a timely manner. The more distance between the end of the meeting and the time that you sit down and clean those notes up, the harder it is to remember what the gobbledygook was that you captured, okay? Participants, when they get those, should read that stuff and make sure they're still accurate and valid. Otherwise, they're useless. It's an exercise in paper writing administrative futility for everybody if no one's gonna look at it. And then we have this sense often that it's up to the leader to make sure everything gets communicated up and down. But as a leader, we need to communicate to the folks in that room that are part of that meeting, hey, everybody needs to be aware of the comms compass from their perspective and their relationships and communicate up, down, sideways appropriately any important outcomes from that meeting.
Yeah, Ed, that one supports that limit the participants in the meeting, right? That depends on the folks that you bring to the meeting using this comms compass when they go away. That way you don't have to have an all hands meeting. You can just have the subject matter experts there and let them communicate what happened.
Yeah, great point. Exactly. So the whole organization ends up being more effective that way. And then, thanks, Mike. And then finally, look, as you initially kind of wander out on this little trip to operate more effectively in this environment, solicit some feedback, all of you, ID, hey, what's working, what can we do better? And eventually you'll probably be able to stop doing that because you'll get a drum beat. You'll get kind of a battle rhythm going and you'll all get a lot better at it. Key to these things that we've talked about are some techniques, not just for the leader and the facilitator, but the participants as well, that can help all of the things we've talked about work better, more effectively, okay? So we're gonna talk about some techniques, then Mike's gonna talk about some do's and don'ts. Setting. Look, this is something we all clearly have control over. I can determine what my setting is gonna be, make sure it's in the right place, make sure it's quiet, my technology works, all of that in my house while I'm there, find that spot. And then in addition to that, it's like awareness about how close you are to your microphone, that you can hear appropriately, all of that stuff, testing it, making sure it works. That has an exponential effect on everybody else in the meeting, especially when you're doing it right and they're all doing it right, okay? One of the key things that we've all learned over the years, and although we've joked about it a few times, it's important. The house you're in right now is your spouse's house too, and it's your kid's house too. So out of pure respect, it's a great idea to negotiate with them to say, hey, look, there's gonna be times when I need to meet. There's gonna be times when I'm gonna have to do this. And it's amazing how accommodating everybody is for everybody else when they know, and it reduces frustration significantly.
And it works a lot better than opening the door and screaming out the door for the kids to be quiet in the middle of the meeting.
Yeah, exactly. Effective listening. Effective listening in regards to this is all about listening to understand versus listening to respond. It's the ability to sit there and say, okay, can I assimilate this information to the point that I could reiterate it if I had to? Or if I'm one of the participants, could I listen to it and assimilate the information enough to be able to respond effectively with what they're looking for? That's what effective listening is all about. Effective questions is really about asking questions that elicit a substantive response, relevant response, not a yes or no, unless you're looking for a yes or no. Sometimes that is effective. But by and large, it's questions that are how oriented, what oriented, they're open-ended. You can't answer without there being some natural rigor behind the answer because of the way the question was asked. All of those as facilitators can help limit the amount of time that people have to fumble with trying to figure out what to say or what you're asking, all right? Using media effectively, I know we've touched on it a few times. There's a couple of things that we need to be aware of. Technology mastery is one of them, but selecting the right media right up front, knowing how to use that media, not using that media as a crutch, all right? Not necessarily abusing the media. And what we mean by that is using all the bells and whistles associated with the media at the time when it's not necessary. We talk about the mute button on these capabilities like Zoom, but we're talking about the sound mute. We don't always talk about the video mute. It's not always necessary to have a picture up of somebody you're looking at. And if everybody's on mute and they're just participating, other people can be distracted by the visual background, the dog walking around or somebody dusting the ceiling or taking whatever's happening in the background. We don't always need to see that.
All right? Pouring the beer in the glass.
Pouring the beer in the glass. Drinking the Jameson. So that's important to understand, visual mute. There's times to use it and times to not. Pick the right medium, make sure you're using it appropriately. Proportional response, right? If I look at my objectives and all it needs to be is a phone call between two people, I don't necessarily need to get a video with sound, with music playing in the background and flashing lights. Overkill. Engagement triggers is maybe one of the strongest things that a facilitator can use to continue doing these next two things, both maintaining control and maintaining the tempo. So if I've got a bunch of people in a meeting and those personalities, there's dominant and there's the passive personalities out there, I don't know who's paying attention, like Mike said earlier, or who's multitasking or doing other things. So one of the simple things that you can do is have a list of names of the people that are there in their role in that meeting. If it's your team, you're going to know. If it's a group, you might need to jot them down. And throughout the meeting, especially if it's a longer meeting, engage those people periodically but routinely. Hey, Mike, so what's the impact of XYZ on this decision or on this plan? And Mike's either going to say, nothing really right now that I can think of, or he's going to go, you know, I think it's this. But the bottom line is, when you ask Mike and you ask Susie and you ask Tommy, guess what's going to happen? They're going to start recognizing, particularly as you have a drumbeat, that you do this. So they're going to focus more on what's going on in the meeting, and they're going to be more prone to pay attention so that in the event that you do call on them, they're prepared. Maintaining balance and control. Those personalities, dominant, passive, you want to make sure the appropriate people are getting appropriate opportunities to provide appropriate input, all right? And you got to keep control of it. You don't want somebody else to take over just because they're more dominant, okay? So you establish those ROE at the beginning. And finally, meetings can be exhausting as it is. And when you're sitting in this environment where you're having to listen very intently and you only have two dimensions, your brain is very taxed. The whole engagement can be very taxing. So make sure you as the facilitator maintain the tempo, and we as participants help maintain that tempo by being concise and following the rules of engagement. So
staying focused on what's going on, so there's not a lot of dead air.
Yeah, exactly. You look at these things and you say any one of these can be an effective force multiplier, right? For making your meetings work better. Taken collectively, they can have an exponential impact, just these. So we're before Mike talks about some do's and don'ts, and I think it's an important do and don't, we know that you folks know most of this stuff, even if it's just a reminder. But mostly what we're talking about here is behavior. And what we know and how we behave, all of us, by the way, are guilty of this. What we know and how we behave are two very different things. And very often we know the way we should be behaving to make this stuff work better and to apply these things, but we don't. So that's why Mike, when he talks about do's and don'ts and talks about these resources, they can be very helpful in refreshing and reminding us. So on that note, Mike, some of those key checklist items.
Thanks, Ed. And as a part of a wrap up to this, yeah, it says do's and don'ts at the top, and the first thing somebody out there is going to notice is that everything is a don't. There's obviously a do associated with them, but these are really behavioral things like Ed was talking about. Facilitator, don't invite too many people. Instead, do what we suggested in there. Use your purpose and objectives that you've defined to figure out who needs to be there and make sure those are the people that come. Don't play favorites during the meeting if you're facilitating and you know that there's one person in there that you can get all the answers from, but there's four other people that had to be in that meeting. Try to include everybody and maintain that balance. Don't ever give up control of the facilitation. If you've got a dominant person on there that's trying to take over the meeting or take over that virtual engagement, it's your responsibility as the facilitator to keep control of what's going on using some of those techniques that we talked about. Here's a big one. Don't let the meetings run long. As Ed said, they're frustrating enough already. It's taxing enough on you already. If the meeting's supposed to be an hour long, make it an hour long or less. If you can get done with the purpose and objectives quicker, don't sit there and try to figure out how to burn up another 5 minutes. Let people go early. It's a little benefit. One great way to do that, not let meetings run long, is don't repeat everything.
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
You know, one thing on don't run long too is it occurs to me, if you start letting people go, they're going to start coming, you know, early because you're more efficient and effective. They're going to start being much more prepared and compliant with your meetings because they know your meetings are efficient.
Not only are they efficient, but if they do what they're supposed to do and you get done early, you get done early. You don't sit there all day. Yeah. So sometimes as a facilitator, some complex idea comes up and you have to re-articulate it to the folks to make sure that everybody understands it. That's okay. Don't repeat everything everybody says. Everybody doesn't need a read back. It gets annoying and it really makes the meeting run long. So only re-articulate a message or repeat a message for clarity when necessary. As participants, we talked about that two-dimensional communication. Don't assume what you can't see. He might not be frustrated on the other end of the phone. He might have just dropped his coffee. So ask. Use your words to fill in the gaps that you've lost with no body language and no social cues. As a participant, don't dominate or interrupt during the meeting. That's frustrating and makes the meeting run longer. What I like to do instead is I keep a notepad with a pen right next to me, and I think of something that I want to bring up, I'll jot it down on there, and then wait until the appropriate time to put in my two cents. Don't leave it on hot mic. That's an old helicopter term, but that's when you stay off mute for the whole meeting. First of all, the barking dogs and the vacuum cleaners, everybody can hear those, and it's distracting to everyone. But the other thing with this technology, if you got 100 people in the meeting and everybody's got their mute turned off, all of that white noise is data that's getting sent into the machine, and it's going to crash one of your software tools. So stay on mute unless you got something to say or it's your turn to talk.
Hey, Mike, the other thing, remember too, and all of us have experienced this, when somebody stays on, when we're on hot mic, when we've got the mute, you know, we're not on mute and everybody can hear us, you can hear everybody going like this or, you know, and you do tend to assume what you can't see and you're going, well, obviously they don't want to be here. So it's just added little things like that that exacerbate the already challenging environment.
Yeah, great point. There's the harumphs and the sighs in the background make it really tough for this facilitator to keep doing his job. So if you're frustrated with a meeting, make sure you're on mute before you sigh into the microphone. Don't status what you can read ahead of time. The leader has gone to the trouble, we hope, to determine and disseminate the purpose and objectives, any read-ahead material that you needed to be prepared, and the agenda for what we're going to do in the meeting. Do your part as a professional and read that stuff. Know why you're going to the meeting and know what's expected out of you in your role at the meeting. The worst thing you can do is walk in there and spend the first 15 minutes of a 30-minute meeting getting you up to speed because you didn't do your homework before the meeting. And finally, don't multitask. If you're in a virtual meeting, if you're operating in the virtual environment, that is your appointed place of time. That is your appointed place during that time. So stay focused on that. Don't cook dinner while you're doing it or wash the car, okay?
Yeah, because partly like that behavior thing, it's about respecting the other people's time that are on there too, that prepared and are part of it. And then they feel like, I mean, I do sometimes when people get on there, I'm like, hey, I'm sitting here trying to participate and get the most out of this meeting. You know, why am I wasting my time if you're not doing the same? And right. Again, one more thing to exacerbate an already challenging environment.
Right. Thanks, Ed. So folks, in review, the next thing we've got is some tools and resources that are gonna help with this stuff. So as we suggested, we've given you a fire hose for about 30 minutes of some tips and tricks that we've learned, some lessons learned, the high level stuff that can really make a difference as we step off into this teleworking world that we're now in. To kind of fill in the gaps for you, we've put together a couple of tools and some resources that are available. You can download them on our website or you can get a hold of us and we'll get them to you. Just some simple stuff to fill in the blanks of everything that we've talked about today. And the first one is a virtual meeting checklist. It's a simple little one-pager that we highly recommend you actually put as the first slide in your presentation in a virtual meeting, or you use it on the phone and just read down it. It's a great way to kick off a meeting, because it lists for you the things you need to do. Take role, review the technology, which buttons to use, whether we're on mute or not on mute with the video and the audio. It takes you through the rules of engagement and whatever they are, whatever you've decided they are, and it takes you to the purpose and objectives of the meeting. It's a great standardized way to kick off, and once folks start to get used to it, they'll start to expect that kind of information at the beginning of a meeting. Gets everybody on the same page and rolling. The Facilitator's Guide to Virtual Meetings, since we come from an aviation background, is a checklist just like we use to start an airplane. It's got the blocks down the side, and if you get tasked with running a meeting, pull that thing out, start at the top and just start checking stuff off, and you won't miss anything that we've talked about in here. Most of the stuff on there applies to most of the meetings. Obviously, as you're going through it, if it doesn't apply, don't do it, but it'll make sense when you see it. The virtual environment quick reference, simple little two-page card that you can download as well, that has a lot of these tips and techniques and ideas bulletized for you as a reminder. So 2 or 3 months down the road from now, you'll think of, man, I remember Mike and Ed had something in their video, but I don't remember what it was. Hopefully you can look at that quick reference card and it'll remind you of the things that we talked about. And then finally, and very simply, just a one pager with web conferencing considerations for you. It's just the most popular tools like GoToMeeting and Adobe and WebEx and where to get them. But it's up to you to figure that out, right? We're not gonna go through showing you how to use any of that stuff or recommend which one to use. There's a lot of them out there, hundreds of them. And it depends really on what your organization needs, what capabilities you need, and what your IT department will allow you to use. So review that stuff and see what works for you. Some of them are even free, like this one. Okay?
They're all on our website, right, Mike?
Yes, all of these are on our website to pull down, the same place that you saw this video. Okay, so wrapping up, folks, first of all, thanks for taking the time to look at this. We wanted to share this stuff with you because we know it's important right now. And like Ed said at the beginning, most of it's common sense, but you got to do it, right? This is behavior, not knowledge. These are the things that you can do as a leader, as a facilitator, as a participant, to make working in the virtual environment a little bit more effective and a little bit more productive. Feel free, you've already found us on the website, feel free to give us a call if you're about to stand up a meeting or you have some questions about how to do this organizationally. Just give us a call, we'll be happy to talk to you about it. Have a great day, and at least for the near future, remember to wash your hands.
Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it. Thanks, Mike.
Yep, out of here.